When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And Top Story, as always, is brought to you by Telecel, connecting energies, holy insecticide spray and coil. Enjoy a holy sleep. Well, tonight, take urgent legislative steps to resolve any constitutional concerns and assent to the anti-witchcraft bill. That's the advice from the Commission on Human Rights and Administrative Justice, Shraj, to President Akufo-Addo. The private member's bill, sponsored by Madina MP Francis Xavier Sosu, criminalizes the labeling of another person as a witch in Ghana. It also prohibits any person from practicing as a witch doctor. But the president refused to sign into law the bill passed by parliament, citing the financial implications it will have on the consolidated fund, insisting such a bill should have been proposed by the presidency or the attorney general. Shraj Commissioner Joseph Wetala, however, says it is imperative that the president assent to the bill. My colleague James Avej joins me in studio with details of that advisory from Shraj. James, so let's start with the concerns raised by Shraj in this document.
Well, Brace, Shraj is concerned about how women in the country, especially in the north, are normally subjected to public ridicule, isolation, physical and verbal assault, banishment, stigmatization and other forms of inhumane and degrading treatment. They said most of these women are usually accused by persons who suffer various misfortunes like illness, death, accident, poor harvest, poverty, as well as infertility, to be witches, especially as we have seen camps built in the north where some of these women are compelled to go and seek heaven at. They say that these women are confronted with sometimes threat of being killed. Victims find themselves socially, physically, economically, and psychologically ostracized from their communities into finding solace in these deplorable living conditions. Now, they also cited the case of the 90-year-old Ekwe Dente that we heard.
Became quite popular in this country.
In 2020, who was killed up north. They cited that as well. In fact, they say that from some baseline study they did, the Shraj itself did in 2022, they found out that most of these accused persons are actually elderly women who are widowed. They are either illiterate or with poor socioeconomic standard of living. These are the kind of people who are accused in these situations. Now, Shraj is of the view that looking at some international treaties that Ghana has signed on to, for instance, the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, the Paris Treaty, as well as our affiliation with international organizations like the UN, who frown on some of these things and uphold people's human rights. And most importantly, closer to us, our 1992 constitution, in which it is enshrined in Article 12 that it is the fundamental human rights and freedoms of everybody enshrined in the constitution must be respected and upheld by the executive legislature as well as the judiciary. And so they believe that that's the reason why they believe that government must be seen to be taking some step. And in fact, they said in that survey they conducted, one of the recommendations was that the country must take immediate step, especially through legislation, to see to the stop of some of this act.
Which of course was done, right, in terms of legislation.
Exactly, where we saw the Honorable Xavier Sosu did that legislation, which is the Criminal Offences Amendment Act, which we are talking about now as one of the steps. And they go on to say that it is therefore the considered view of the commission that the 1992 constitution enjoins the states and other bodies by human rights principles in the performance of their constitutional functions and to apply same to the development process of the protection of all, especially the vulnerable groups in which women belong. Now, it says that the culture of witchcraft accusation and its connected witch camps is a serious dent on Ghana's image as a country. It has become an albatross around the neck of the country for decades. It is that its dire consequences on the human rights of Ghanaian women is beyond debate. It is also undermines national efforts towards the realization of the SDG goals, particularly Goal 5.
Quite a detailed advice to the president there from Shraj. But let's get more on this.
Before you go, let's end with the advice proper, because the Shraj is saying in that advice that, quote, in the light of the foregoing, the Commission respectfully urges His Excellency the President of the Republic to take urgent steps, including any legislative step that would resolve any constitutional concerns raised by His Excellency the President, in order to assent to the Criminal Offences Amendment Bill 2023, Anti-Witchcraft Bill, to further enhance the protection of this vulnerable group and the consolidation of Ghana's human rights record, unquote. And that has been signed by the Commissioner himself, Joseph Whittal.
Thank you very much, James Aveji, there with that advice from Shraj. Let's put this into perspective of bringing a parliamentary affairs correspondent who has been monitoring this particular bill for some time. Kwaku Asante, grateful for joining. Walk us through the sequence of events. Why did the president refuse to assent to the bill?
I can barely hear things.
Kweku, if you can hear me, I'm trying to find out from you. I want you to walk us through the sequence of events in relation to the passage of this bill.
So, Grace, in July last year, Parliament passed this bill sponsored by Madina MP Francis Xavier Susu, an MP for WA Central, Dr. Godfrey K.B. Jussel. And this bill prescribes an accusation of witchcraft. It comes on the back of several killings, particularly in the northern part of the country, where persons are accused of witchcraft and killed. So in July of last year, Parliament did pass that and communicated to the President, Nana Addo Akufo-Addo, that Parliament had passed that private member's bill sponsored by those two MPs for its assent. The clerk did send that. But when Parliament resumed, the Speaker of Parliament announced in October that the President had written a quite lengthy legal opinion on that particular bill. In fact, that bill had been passed with other bills, the Ghana Forces Amendment Bill, that also removed the matters of death penalty from the Ghana Forces books, and also, in general, Ghanaian books, the Criminal Amendment Law, that removed the death penalty. So those three laws had all gone to the President there for assent. The President did not sign any of them, and wrote to the Parliament of Ghana that because they were private members' bill, they could not have imposed a charge on the Consolidated Fund. And in the opinion of the President, this law, in particular, the anti-witchcraft bill, did impose a charge on the Consolidated Fund, because if persons are to be arrested, jailed, if persons are to be taken rehabilitation, all that process imposes a charge on the Consolidated Fund, for which reason he is unable to sign, and promising that he will instruct his Attorney General to present a bill to Parliament, because in his opinion, being that these bills impose a charge on the Consolidated Fund, they must have come from the government itself. And that is the reason why President Akufo-Addo did not sign that. At the time, the Speaker of Parliament was quite furious about it, threatening that Parliament itself will try and seek some legal opinion on it from the Supreme Court. Parliament has since then not gone to the Supreme Court yet. But since then, these bills have been held in abeyance. They've not been signed up until the Madina MP, who was part of the sponsors, did request the Commission on Human Rights and Administrative Justice to issue this advisory opinion, which they have issued today, advising President Akufo-Addo to resolve or address any legal issues he has with this bill and then sign it into law. By the time it's running, if the President is not signed, if the President does not sign this into law, if it does not become law by the end of the life of this Parliament, the process would have to be restarted afresh, a new bill would have to be presented in Parliament for it to go through all the stages of lawmaking.
Quite interesting. So there hasn't been any action on this since then?
Yes, in fact, since the Speaker of Parliament did read a letter from the President on this and made his opinion known, he disagreed strongly with the President then, not much has happened. In fact, the President, we understand, had some meetings with the Speaker of Parliament to try and get an understanding of where he was coming from. But in terms of publicly, I've not been told if Parliament is taking any steps to get this bill signed by the President, or if it is going to come back to the House, if there are going to be amendments to actually go in consonance with what the President wants. But given that the President has said that because the bill was a private member's bill, for which reason it could not and should not have imposed a charge at the consolidated finally would sign, the bill has been held in the middle. It has been held in abeyance since then.
Kwaku, I'm grateful to you for joining. Let's do more on this and get more perspectives by bringing in the lead sponsor of the anti-witchcraft bill, lawyer Francis Xavier Susu, who is joining us now. Lawyer, I'm grateful to you for joining. You've disagreed with the president on this decision, but he has given reasons why, that this will probably have an impact. It will have an impact on the consolidated fund, and that's why he has decided not to sign. Isn't this reason cogent enough for you?
Absolutely not. And absolutely not, because I think the president is not showing commitment to the cause of the most vulnerable in our country, especially vulnerable aged people. The president is an elderly person, so he should put himself in the bracket of people in his age category who are women, who unfortunately may not have had opportunities and privileges like he had, and some of them living in very, very deplorable states, and some get accused of being witches, sometimes of being wizards, and get killed on account of such accusations. And this is what we're trying to resolve. Now, remember that you cannot place any monetary value on human life. Human life is priceless. The life of our women, vulnerable women, aged women, our mothers and our grandmothers, their lives are priceless. And so there is no reason given by the president that is reasonable enough when it comes to failure to sign or assent to the anti-witchcraft bill. In the first place, the bill did not just get passed in a day. It wasn't a bill that was taken through a certain state of urgency. You couldn't have even done that when it's a private bill. When the motion is first introduced in the Parliament of Ghana, there is a what we call a pre-laying engagement that involves both sides of the House. Mm. And Attorney General has been part of this process from the beginning to the end. Mm. The Ghana Police Service and all other interest groups. And eventually this bill got passed through consensus, even at the committee level and at the plenary level. And so it is quite strange that just when the bill was ready to be assented to, that the president makes a U-turn and says that it's going to impose a charge. And it's so clear, and we've argued over and over and over again, that Article 108 that the president is referring to, it's not a provision available to the president. In fact, if you disagree with the speaker for exercising his right to, admit a particular bill, you don't take the law into your own hands by refusing to assent. And in any event, when you refuse to assent to a bill like that, the law is so clear what you need to do. But that is not what the president has done. And so clearly the president is acting unconstitutionally. Mm. And I think it would be appropriate for the president to take this advice and resolve whatever issues he has and have the bill signed.
You should then be relieved now that Siraj is advising the president to sign this bill then.
Well, it's a welcome news, because you see, this is not an individual battle. It's a collective battle. It's for us. You have a mother, I have a mother. You have a grandmother, I have a grandmother. All of them are potential victims of witchcraft accusation. And so we must see this as a national emergency, that that something needs to be done about that. You know, so I'm glad that Shroud has waited, and I'm looking forward to all the queen mothers waiting into this, the chiefs and eminent and prominent people in this country, religious leaders, who all believe that there is a lot of abuse in that space, to wade into this so we can actually, impress upon the president to sign the bill into law.
Okay, let me bring in a legal practitioner as well. Justice Abdullahi is joining me on the line. Justice, the state has a duty to respect human rights, protect human rights, and to promote human rights. Now, why must this same state focus on the burden the bill will have on the consolidated fund when it has a duty to protect human rights?
That is a multi-million question that I think the president ought to respond to. Arguably, what the president is raising are purely procedural. I mean, this is not to discount the importance of procedure in our legislative framework and indeed in our governance structures. I mean, they are very important and they are designed for our collective good. However, I think that on this particular note, the president did not really act right because I think that assuming that for whatever reason, the president actually believed that the issues he was raising were legitimate and were indeed supersedes the object of the bill as passed. I think the as Francis said earlier, the bill didn't start. I mean, it didn't start with a certificate of urgency. So the president could have bought into this whole bill right from the onset if he believed in the legitimacy of the object of the bill, i.e., for the protection of the most vulnerable. Indeed, unfortunately, you will never find the elite and the wealthy in our society being accused of some of the reasons for lynching and sometimes maiming and killing our folks simply on the grounds of their age and some other psychological problem that they may undergo, for which reason they are accused of being witches and wizards. And so, looking at the quality of and the object of the bill, I would expect that the president could have bought into it right from day one, or overlooked the procedural infraction that he is alleging, which he doesn't have authority to actually raise as a basis to refuse to sign. I've made this very clear right from the day his communique came out that he doesn't have that authority. It doesn't lie in the mouth of the president to raise those matters that he raised as a ground for refusing to sign. My position on this is that once the bill was passed, if the president had any issue, the Constitution has laid down the entire processes that he ought to follow, which would include sometimes even getting to the Council of State for their input and all of that. Otherwise, of course, then his veto power is coming.
Well, but Justice,
if he arrogate to himself the authority, the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court to interpret a bill and make pronouncements on the validity or the constitutionality or otherwise of the bill as passed. I mean, but I disagree with the president on that ground.
If that is the case, can the president then be cited for sidestepping the Constitution? Because you say that the Constitution has made the provision for the process the president can take on to disagree with a bill and not to just say that I disagree and so I will assent. If he didn't, then can't we conclude that he sidestepped the Constitution?
I have made it clear that as you're pronouncing, that the conduct of the president in this particular instance is unconstitutional. It does not accord with the provisions of the Constitution. I think this has not been said in any form or shape that will leave any doubt, at least from my angle. I mean, that I do not think that the president is right in that particular decision. I think that the procedures ought to have been followed if he disagreed in any way, form or shape with the bill as passed. And in addition to that, is my second position that looking at the object of the bill, I think if the president had two additional options there, either to sign or and overlook whatever infractions he claims to have had, he has with the bill, so that we approach the Supreme Court for an interpretation on these matters. The Supreme Court would then come out deciding on the validity or otherwise. And the second option or the third option would have been that the president could have immediately, after having refused to sign, by following the appropriate procedure rather than what he had followed, by bringing the same bill through the Attorney General, sponsored by the Attorney General, under a certificate of urgency. And we wouldn't be having this same conversation today. That would have ended within the same period. Worst case scenario, within a week or two, this whole drama would have ended. Now, for me, this informs me that the reason given by the president is not genuine. It's purely mischief, an attempt to simply refuse to sign a bill brought by our Venerable Francis Osu. Because
but he, as a president, also has a duty to protect the public press.
He does. I'm sure we all have the answer to that. But if really you stretch the argument to that point, this president has woefully not been able to do that. In fact, he has rather, if you want, for want of a better word, he has literally broken the entire public, the press itself, that we can't even find the money. And so let's not even go into that one. I'll be seen to be to be discussing politics rather than focusing on the legal aspect of it.
Because
really, that argument will never... I don't think it is sustainable in any way. If you are dealing with this particular president, he's the worst when it comes to that. But let's focus on this.
So
the point is that the third option could have been simply refusing to sign, which by way of exercising his right of veto, and sponsor the same bill, even if he had to make some amendment that would inure into our collective benefit. Then go under certificate of urgency, considering the entire circumstances of this issue.
All right,
and pass the same bill.
Okay, grateful to you. Let me bring in Francis Xavier Sosu again. Lawyer, our parliamentary affairs correspondent explained earlier that if this session of parliament ends without a president assenting to this bill, when his presidency ends, the whole bill has to, go through the process again. So, and he again said he would come to his next line of action will be that he brings a bill in his name or in that of the Attorney General. What will be your next line of action as a sponsor of this particular witchcraft bill?
Well, I am still very hopeful that with all these conversations, the president will be convinced to rescind his decision and assent to the bill. And so this becomes one of his own legacy before he leaves office. Because if you claim to be a human rights person and all that over the years, and this is how you end your tenure of office, that will be an anticlimax to whatever you've always claimed to always be. So I am really, really hopeful and praying that at a point in time, he probably, based on this advice by the Shraj, the Attorney General may reconsider what kind of advice that has been proffered to the president based on Article 108, so that the president would be able to assent to this bill. Of course, in the likely or the unlikely event that he decides not to sign, definitely, I am hopeful that the next government would take this matter very seriously. And if when by God's grace I get elected back into Parliament as a member of Parliament for Madina constituency from 2025, definitely this is something I'll be pushing through the NDC government to ensure that this definitely gets done, so women are protected. But the ultimate purpose is the protection of the vulnerable.
Mr. Joseph Wotal himself, who is a commissioner of Shraj, way back in April, when he was speaking on the sidelines of a national policy dialogue on access to justice for women accused as witches in Ghana, appealed to the president to sign, but nothing changed. So why do you believe that something can change now?
Well, when people are eventually leaving office, I've seen presidents having lost the election, declare amnesty, try to show some good faith and love to people, especially when they have lost so much goodwill. So I'm hoping that maybe this will be one of the goodwill tokens that the president may give to the people of Ghana and the women of Ghana before he leaves office.
Francis Xavier Sosu, I'm grateful to you for joining. Also, Justice Abdullahi, a private legal practitioner who spoke earlier, I'm grateful to you, gentlemen, for joining us. This is still top story. But there is a bigger conversation coming up tonight on the Joy News channel. In the wake of the decision by SNIT to sell off 60% of its stake in Four Top Hotels, Labour agitated against the decision, forcing the buyer, the prospective buyer, and SNIT itself to withdraw from this transaction. But we're asking, how do workers secure their future? What must really change? And that's the bigger conversation tonight, what we're having on the Joy News channel and also on Joy 99.7 FM. Head of our political affairs desk, Evans Mensa, is here with me, Evans. So, what is the expectation tonight?
So this is the biggest conversation of our time. Pensions. In the book of, you just laid a foundation there, the SNIT conversation, we covered it quite extensively, but there are bigger issues at play here. And you've heard civil society talk about it. Even the workers themselves have hinted that there's a need to look at the pension structure, as far as SNITE is concerned, more comprehensively. So we are creating this platform, and this is something we do very regularly. When a big issue comes, we want to go beyond the headlines and bring the experts into a room so we can discuss this very thoroughly. So tonight, just four minutes away on Joy News. This is going to be live here on Joy 99.7 FM. We're going to have that conversation. Pension reform, securing our future.
Exactly.
So everybody's future is at stake here. What must change? There's consensus that it cannot stay the same. Something needs to give. So the process that we went in, this controversy, never repeats itself. And that is why we're bringing together all these experts and stakeholders to talk about this tonight, from 6 all the way to 9.
So 3-hour-long conversation that will culminate into what?
What we do every time we have a thought leadership event is always to put together a communique that we'll share across our many platforms, but also hand it to the stakeholders and follow up. That's exactly what I want to do with this particular one also. But I'm interested in the caliber of individuals who are going to be part of this conversation. And this is not a SNIT conversation. This is a pension conversation, right? So we're going beyond SNIT. We are bringing in for this conversation Thomas Kwesi Esso. He's the Executive Secretary of the Chamber of Pension Trustees, right? He will join us with his thoughts on this particular matter. I remember that when we did the DDEP, they were one of those institutions that were significantly affected, okay? So how do you place them in the position where the investments you are making into your pensions doesn't get eroded over time, okay? So we'll hear from them on this. But we need to also talk to pensioners themselves, those who are on pension currently. What is the experience with the system, and will they support some reforms, and what will they recommend? And so we have a pensioner joining us tonight. That's Violet Allen will join us for a conversation, and she's been campaigning herself on this matter for a long time, and she's on pensions. And so we'll hear her thoughts on this.
Okay.
We also have tonight joining us from the TUC. TUC has been at the forefront of this. TUC will join us. Their director of research will join us for a conversation. He's been doing a lot of work in this particular area. We have the chief executive of the Africa Center for Retirement Research will join us. Now, just today, a couple of hours back, SNIT themselves confirmed that they're going to be part of this. And we're happy that they're joining because they see why this is important. Go beyond the controversy, go beyond the headlines and talk to them. Then we have individual members of organized labor like Nagrat will join us for a conversation tonight. You have the Ghana Registered Nurses will join us. We have the Austin Gummy, who was very instrumental in the crafting of the whole pensions regulations that we have, will join us. And then we have the former General Secretary of the Ghana Medical Association, who, by the way, also happens to be a board member of the MPRA, will also join us. So this is comprehensive. And our colleague, Benjamin Akakwo, will be hosting this.
Okay, all right. So expect that big